Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks. This week, you'll never guess, we're talking about a book.
Whoa, us? The two of us talking about a book?
A vintage one at that.
Whoa.
On our antiques podcast of all things. Now, Dee, would you like me to tell you the story of 100 operas?
I absolutely would. That is an intriguing title.
I almost believed you.
Please believe me, I gotta know more. Is the book called that?
It is. It is the story of 100 operas, the invaluable guide for every music lover and radio listener by Felix Mendelssohn.
Because the title sounds like something you would say about opera. Like, derisively.
This is the story of 100 operas.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, a girl met a guy, they can't be together. The end. Story of 100 operas.
So, spoiler for the book. So this was originally published in 1913. However, the specific edition in my hands right now was republished by Grosset and Dunlap Incorporated.
Ooh, Grosset and Dunlap. Like old friends of mine.
Copyright 1940, printed in the United States of America, as part of the Little Music Library. And indeed, this volume is very small. It's like 3.5 by 5 inches. It fits very nicely in the palm of my hideously small hand.
Oh, I love a little tiny book.
Now, Dee, why do you think this book was reprinted in 1940?
That's a good question. Oh, is it because of the Great Depression?
No, actually. For once, something on this podcast is happening that isn't Great Depression caused.
Almost every time someone says, well, it happened in the late 30s, early 40s, it's like, ah, Great Depression, I know, yeah. Made it smaller because I couldn't afford big books.
But no. To learn why this was reprinted, we must go to the foreword from the publisher.
Oh, okay, they give us an answer.
When Felix Mendelssohn first conceived the idea of writing The Story of 100 Operas, opera going was a luxury available only to the quote-unquote carriage trade.
Carriage trade. All right, gonna have to pause here and ask if you can explain that.
People who were wealthy enough to own carriages and ride around in them.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know about you, Dee. I personally do not come from a carriage trade line.
Not in the slightest.
And those with a European background who had learned to love operatic music from the vantage points of low-priced seats and municipal grand opera houses. There were a few bold spirits who dared to predict the day when the people of America, popularly supposed to be completely occupied in the grubbing for dollars, would become opera-minded.
All right, I'm already getting sort of like a tenor that this person does not like opera.
That might just be my instinctive vocal inflections. I don't know that I'd put that on the writer.
Okay, all right.
One is almost tempted to believe an opera lover such as Mr. Mendelssohn might have been gifted with second sight, since the radio, the greatest single factor in the phenomenal spread of interest in the opera, was not even dreamed of in those days.
This dumb bitch ass couldn't even think about a fucking radio. Now what, Mendelssohn?
Also, as a 19th century and early 20th century scholar, I have to interrupt and say the publishers in this case are mistaken. People were in fact thinking about the radio, which was part of why the radio was developed.
That's like a really good point that, like, if they weren't thinking about the radio, then who made the radio?
Oops, indeed. Trick question, it was Jesus.
I always knew. You know, people like that guy for a good reason.
Jesus descended for a brief moment, handed someone a radio, and then vamoose, back into heaven.
It's actually, it adds a whole nother layer to Video Killed the Radio Star. Video killed the radio star for our sins.
Oh my god. Each week in the season, many millions of Americans listen to the great operas played and sung over the airwaves. A generation ago, the capital R ring might have meant the local political setup of a provincial city. Today, Americans discuss the beloved epics of the operatic stage as they discuss books and plays and movies. The growth and spread and appreciation of this longest neglected of the arts is as amazing as the development of our architecture or our systems of transportation!
Alright, okay, I'm pro-opera, but that seems like it's going a little far.
Hey, remember when the transportation system of America was something to be proud of?
That was so tight back then.
It is for these sincere and enthusiastic converts whose lives have been so immeasurably enriched by contact with the great operatic treasures that this little book has been prepared. Naturally, it cannot contain all the outstanding works of the master composers. Perhaps one or two of your favorites have had to be omitted. Something had to be sacrificed for the convenient format which fits so handily in Milady's handbag, or causes scarcely a bulge in Mimaster's coat pocket. Get up!
I take issue with almost everything that was just said.
It sucks!
Goddamn near everything.
Now, as much as I want to, I am not going to sit here and read you the plot of all 100 operas.
I was kind of hoping you would.
We'll make that a Patreon bonus, how's that?
I was gonna say, that's a Patreon bonus, we're gonna read this whole ass thing.
However, there is one that I absolutely must read to you of all the operas.
Oh, please tell me the story of the 100th opera.
I must tell you the story of Dinora.
Who is...
an opera in three acts by Meyerbeer with a libretto by Barbier and Carr. First production, Paris, 1859.
Okay.
The cast includes Hoel, a goatherd, bass. Dinora, betrothed to Hoel, soprano. Corentin, the bagpiper, a tenor.
Oh, no thank you. Already.
Huntsman, bass. First shepherd boy, soprano. And second shepherd boy, mezzo-soprano.
Alright, that's a decent collection. Those are some interesting character titles.
The place, Brittany. Time, early Middle Ages. On the day that Hoel and Dinora are to be married, a terrific thunderstorm destroys Dinora's house.
Well, shucks.
Hoel, to comfort the sorrowing Dinora, determines to rebuild the house. The old wizard Tonic...
I'm sorry?
I guess he doesn't get to sing because he's not listed in the cast, but the old wizard Tonic tells him that there is gold way off in a glen guarded by goblins.
Wait, they just gave a speaking role in an opera?
I am giving you all of the facts, Dee.
Okay, very strange.
This is everything I have. To secure this gold to rebuild the house, he must remain in the glen and keep silent for a year.
What?
Then the first person who touches the gold will die.
What? Hey, good question, what?
After this, the goatherd will be able to get all he needs.
What?
Hoel departs, and Dinora thinks she has been deserted. So great is the shock that she becomes half-demented.
Only half. That's great, because I'm like really charging towards full.
So, I need you to understand, this is all just prologue. We are not yet in Act 1.
That's fucking crazy. That's a lot. That's a lot going on in the prologue.
How are we feeling about Dinora so far, Dee?
Why? Fantastic. We are pro-Dinora here in this household.
Have you dropped your opera glasses yet? Let me know.
They popped right off my head.
Act 1. Dinora appears in the woods in bridal robes, looking for her pet goat. Finding him, she sings a lullaby, yes, my beloved one. Wandering on, she finds a bagpiper, Corentin, who has just returned from uncanny regions, where he saw gnomes and elves and other terrifying creatures.
I know that in the history of, you know, the mythological creatures, gnomes and elves do have a different connotation. I would still not call them terrifying.
You have to understand, this opera was produced pre-David the Gnome.
I know that gnomes in a lot of folklore were very, like, crafty, mischievous creatures, but I just think that, like, terrifying is it's just, like, nothing they do is going to inspire terror in me.
This is a world before Moomin. Like, you gotta understand. It was so much scarier. He thinks that the girl is one of these phantoms who makes people dance until they die.
What a thing to say!
In fun, Dinora does make the bagpiper dance until he is exhausted.
Bitch!
The girl sings to the accompaniment of the dance. Hoel, back from his year of silence in the glen, suddenly appears.
Suddenly, Hoel!
Dinora is frightened at the stranger, once her sweetheart, and she flees in terror. Hoel, wanting somebody to touch the magic gold first, remember that plot point?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Schemes to get the bagpiper to go with him.
What? This is just, like, the bagpiper's worst day ever?
Yeah! He tells Corentin that he lived with the wizard for a year, and that this wizard told him to find a white goat which would guide him to the treasure. Hearing the bell on Dinora's goat, Hoel rushes out, taking the bagpiper with him. Thus concludes Act 1. Curtain fall. Audience, presumably, applauds?
Boy, I can't even imagine having to sit through all of that done through song.
You would not be riveted?
I'm ready to, like, give a gold bounty to whoever wrote this book, because they actually are saving lives by sparing people from going to see this.
Maybe this is one of those things where, like, the concept of the concept album sounds so stupid, but, like, musically the arrangement is incredible to the point where no one really cares what the actual song is about.
You're gonna use my love of prog concept albums against me?
My only other argument is, what if this is the Every Time We Touch of opera?
Oh my god, what if?
Like, the lyrics are bone stupid, but no one cares because it's such a bop.
Alright, you know what? Maybe.
Act 2. Wood by Moonlight. This act begins with the beautiful shadow dance.
Oh, we all know that.
Dinora sees her shadow in the moonlight, thinks that it is a friend, and sings and dances to it.
Okay, it's starting to sound like Dinora is now the meanest and stupidest bitch in the woods.
I mean, the prologue did leave her half-demented, so...
Oh, that's right, I forgot she was half-demented.
Hoel and Corentin reach the wild district in which the gold is to be found. A female voice is heard singing the legend of the gold. He who touches it first shall die. Upon hearing this, the bagpiper, already scared at the surroundings, determines to get out as fast as possible. Jinkies, I'm out of here, says the bagpiper.
Yipes!
This determination leads to an altercation between him and Hoel. Dinora appears, pursuing her goat. Hoel thinks she is a supernatural messenger sent to warn him against causing the death of the bagpiper, and he regrets his murderous intentions.
Okay, yeah.
The demented girl, in crossing a bridge, loses her balance and falls into the river below. Hoel plunges in after her and brings her to shore unconscious. Curtain fall on Act 2.
Is this gonna be like a 90s movie where she's gonna be like better now?
Yeah, that was my favorite part of 90s movies. When a woman went insane and drowned and then was magically fine.
Like, I mean, come on, we got like 50 First Dates. It's actually not that far off.
You know what, you're right. That's early 2000s, though.
Okay, that's fair.
Act 3. Ideal country landscape. Hunter's song. Hoel enters bearing the senseless Dinora. He is heartbroken for he has recognized her as his lost sweetheart. The girl recovers consciousness and, due to the shock of the fall and finding her lover again, her reason suddenly returns.
Ah, called it.
The song of the pilgrims is heard.
You all know that one. Everybody knows that bop.
And Hoel gives up further thought of treasure. Instead, he goes with Dinora to the church to marry her.
The end?
Curtain fall on opera.
That's it?
Leaving the audience to wonder, why the fuck did we come here?
At long last, my stupid girlfriend isn't stupid anymore. The end.
I don't even want the murder treasure anymore.
I don't even fucking want it. Whatever, I'm gonna leave it hanging around where it will inevitably kill someone.
And this is just one of the 100 operas available in this invaluable tome.
Like, the average opera is like 4 hours, right?
4 to 6, yeah.
Could you imagine watching that for four hours?
Again, I haven't heard this opera. The music could be amazing.
I mean, with fucking jams like the Pilgrim Song and the inevitable presence of bagpipes.
This could be mid-19th century EDM. I don't know. This could be Burning Man for French Bohemians.
It better be. I mean, like, that's a whole portion of your life you don't get back.
I mean, you could make the same argument about this podcast.
No, this... First of all, how dare you? First of all, how dare you? This podcast is, like, the only good use of your time.
The only?
This podcast is the morally correct use of your time, yes.
Was there a second point, or was it just that point?
The second point was shut up. I hope that helps.
It does. Now I know what you're thinking. If only I held in my own hands the story of 100 operas. Well, I have fantastic news for you about the achievability of your dreams.
Oh my god.
Because by the time you hear this, the story of 100 operas will be available in the Antiques Freaks Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where it will sit alongside a beautiful collection of other vintage books. and you may peruse to your heart's content.
Ah, you could own the magic for yourself.
You too can read aloud the summary of Denora to yourself alone.
In the dark, while the shadow song plays.
Or maybe you genuinely enjoy opera, and the last 20 minutes have been deeply offensive to you and everything you hold dear. In which case, it is your duty to rescue this book from us Philistines.
From our uncaring hands.
From our unworthy palms.
We're looking at it, we have it set up, we're pointing at it, and we're laughing. We're saying, ah, foolish book, you'll never become a great artist.
But if you would like to suggest an episode topic or just say hello, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can tag us on Facebook. Nope, sorry. One more again. My mind is still aflame with Denora. You can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. You can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com. Or you can check out our Instagram at instagram.com/antiquesfreaks.
If you liked hearing about what might be the worst opera ever, feel free to scroll on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leave us a 5-star review. Now, I'm not going to get tickets to that. 5 stars.
These jokers wouldn't know opera if it bit them in the ass. 5 stars. And if you need more Antiques Freaks in your week, or if you heard us tease the prospect of reading aloud still more operas on our Patreon and thought to yourself, wait a minute, what's a Patreon? You should head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where every week we read and review a chapter of the Victorian penny dreadful Varney the Vampire, the Feast of Blood.
And you might say, I still don't know what a Patreon is, but I am listening to Varney now, and that's pretty nice.
Special thanks to our patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Au revoir.
Goodbye.